C'è qualcuno là fuori? C'è qualcuno là fuori?
Benvenuti al Christian Podcast.
Hello.
There he is. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing well.
Awesome.
You have to Beto?
Yes, Beto. Beto.
Okay. Beto. It's good to meet you.
All right, good to meet you too. This is fun. Are you in the same time zone as me? I think you're in the West Coast.
I'm on the West Coast, yeah. So I'm not sure exactly where you're at. So are you in Central Time or where are you?
No, I'm in Pacific Time. I'm in Costa Mesa, California. So Southern California. It's my first ever live episode, so we're live, man. So all mistakes and all are happening right in, right on time. But I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. And I have the book right here in my hands. It's so good. I love that it's almost like nice and short and small. And I was almost going to say, man, I feel like I can almost just roll it up and smoke it in.
There was some talk about making the cover out of hemp. So
wow. So why did that not happen?
I don't know. Maybe it was a cost thing. Once I send a Word file off to the publisher, it's kind of out of my hands at that point.
All right. Yeah. Well, Todd, I just want to say, first of all, thank you for writing this. Thank you for being on the show. This is Christian Podcast. My name is Beto Gudiño. And I want to let our audience know a little bit of who you are, and I have it right here. It says, Todd Miles is professor of theology at Western Seminary in Portland, Oregon, where he teaches theology, church history, hermeneutics, and ethics. Now, this is so interesting. Prior to becoming a seminary professor, he was a nuclear engineer at Pacific Northwest Laboratory. Nuclear engineer. I mean, what? That's amazing, man. Yeah. That's so cool. And one more thing. Married with 6 children, Todd is a fan of all things Oregon State and enjoys running and reading, though rarely at the same time.
hopefully not.
So good. Todd, these are some credentials right here. Nuclear engineer. How did you go from nuclear engineer to professor of theology?
Well, you know, I would love to say that I had a dream or a vision or something like that, some road to Antioch experience, but that just wasn't the case. I just found that that what I was doing at the end of my workday, you know, the ministry stuff, was more interesting and more fun and more fulfilling than what I was doing as an engineer. I don't hate engineering, but I love what I'm doing right now, for sure. So
cool. So would you mind telling us a little bit of what are you doing right now? I mean, we read a little bit of that, but from your own words.
Yeah. So, well, I teach at Western Seminary. I'm an elder at my church. I'm going to start my 19th year of teaching, which is strange because I still feel like the young guy. I have 3 kids at home, 3 are out, 1's married, 2 grandchildren, which is really just kind of the icing on the cake and the fun part. This is like my week off, my week in between. I just submitted summer term grades Friday, and next week we start with orientation for that. So yeah, I'm kind of in between right now.
Wow, that's so good. And well, my kids are going back to school today, so I just came from dropping them off in school. They're all in elementary grades, so it's the first time ever that all my 3 kids are going to be in the same school at the same time, only for 1 year. So that's pretty fun to, you know, just taking all the 3 there. But I mean, we're going to have a great conversation, and I want to ask you about why. I mean, this is cannabis and the Christian. Of course, I think, you know, this is a subject that relates to anyone in the world, but why? I mean, is this a book that's not going to be for somebody that's not Christian? Is that your specific focus to say, yeah, I want to talk to Christian people?
Well, it certainly is aimed at Christians. Now, a lot of what I have to say would apply to non-Christians in terms of risks and health benefits for certain components of the cannabis plant. So all of that applies. And I think, you know, that even if a person is not a believer or a follower of Christ, they still stand before the same God who created them. And so in that sense, it applies. But what I'm mostly interested in is getting good information at the hands of people who want to follow Jesus, thinking about what the Bible has to say so that we can make good wisdom decisions. And I'm under no illusion that people who don't understand themselves to be Christians, who are not followers of Jesus, are going to be all that interested in honoring Jesus with their behavior and with their thoughts and habits and such.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so good. And, you know, when we talk about marijuana, I have like a list of 30 questions I would almost like to ask, but I'm going to try to focus on, personally, I feel like I've never been, my only experience with marijuana has been people who have used it and then committed a crime against me in a sense. I have a little bit of a negative view of it. But I know there's a whole topic about, you know, there's medical marijuana, there's CBD, and I think your book is really helpful in kind of like differentiating what it is, what it is not, the risk and stuff. So first of all, I would like to say why talk about marijuana? Like, you said in the book, like the churches is catching up to culture. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that means?
Yeah. So here in the state of Oregon, we legalized medical marijuana some time ago, recreational marijuana a little more recently, but still we're one of the first states. Portland, Oregon, where I live, right across the river from the state of Washington, and Washington, Colorado were the first two states to legalize recreational marijuana. And I write about this in the book, but this is how the whole thing started for me, is that the day after recreational marijuana was legalized in the state of Washington, one of the people in our congregation came to us, the leaders of the church, and asked, hey, now that it's legal, can I just go across the river and smoke some pot? Would that be okay? And we realized that the typical answer that Christians had always leaned upon for why you should not smoke pot was no longer available for all practical purposes. We could no longer say, no, you can't, it's against the law. And so we had to start thinking like Christians about it. And in order to do that, we had to plumb the Bible for what it has to say. Of course, marijuana is not in the Bible, but the Bible has a lot to say about intoxication. It has a lot to say about discipleship and wisdom and honoring the Lord and taking every thought captive in obedience to Christ and things of that nature. And so I put some thoughts together on it and presented them at a pastor's conference here in the state of Oregon. And it was just supposed to be a breakout session, but by the time that I actually did the breakout session, it was basically a plenary session. It was just packed. And I realized then that what our church had experienced was very common. The churches just didn't really know how to think intentionally about marijuana use, either recreationally or medically. There's a stigma attached to it, but just saying no, you can't do it because that's not what Christians are supposed to do would not be a sufficient answer. And so from that point on, I ended up getting invited all over the place to speak on it, and then. The publishers at Brodmann Holman thought this would be worth a book on, and so I think that the church has some catching up to do because it's definitely either in your state now or it's coming to your state. It's just a matter of time.
Yes, I think so. And even as you said in the book, what was smoked in the 1960s and 1970s is not what is being consumed today. And no, you talk about the risks and is it addictive? But that point about it's coming to your state, and I think it's coming to the world, right? It's, this is everywhere. So I think as Christians, sometimes the assumption is if it's legal, then it's okay, right? But now I think now there's the boundaries between what's legal and what's right are a little more confusing nowadays. Mm-hmm. So I think this is where your book has been so helpful. And like I was saying, it's kind of like a short read, but it's so helpful that it, mm-hmm. it really talks about what the Bible says and doesn't say about marijuana and what it means. But could you elaborate, first of all, like, why are there so many names to marijuana? I mean, what's the difference between marijuana, CBD, pot, cannabis? Like, why all these different names?
Yeah, well so there's a couple different things just to answer your question there. The Latin name for the plant, the scientific name for the plant is where our word cannabis comes from. There's a lot of slang names for the for marijuana as well. Now CBD is a component of the cannabis plant, just like THC is. And the cannabis plant is a highly complex plant, lots of different components, some of which are psychoactive, some of which are not. But you know, there's all sorts of slang names, pot, weed, and then there are a number of delivery methods as well for marijuana. And so, you know, joint and blunt and so on would be where those would fall in.
Okay. And when it comes to marijuana and the Christian, I think there's this perception that, okay, it's not in the Bible, but the Bible talks about trees and talks about, you know, weeds, or talks about plants that come from the ground, and God saying, hey, God said this is good, right? Yeah. God's good creation. So could you elaborate a little bit about what it means when the Bible says that something is good, and can that be applied to something like marijuana?
Yeah. So let me answer just first something that was implied in what you said, which I think would be helpful for some, is that, the word tree is certainly in the Bible, and the word weed is in the Bible as well. But those don't reference the cannabis plant. Those are modern day slang terms for the cannabis plant. Now, So those don't apply any more than like references to pot in the Bible, because there's pots and pans in the Bible, but it's not talking about the marijuana plant. And it, for most people, that would be like, well, no, duh, I already knew that. But it's surprising the kind of questions that I get on this. So then how are we supposed to think about marijuana as a plant when the scriptures say that the plants are good? Well, I would say that plants are good, that God created the cannabis plant, and God is a good creator. And so the cannabis plant is a generous provision of a good God. But like all of God's good gifts, they are to be used responsibly, and they can be used irresponsibly, or they can just be misused as well. You know, that like arsenic is a good provision of a generous God. That doesn't mean that I should drink it, right? Things will go sideways very, very quickly. But I do think it's important that we start there. That the cannabis is a creation of a good God. It's a generous provision, and we need to figure out what its uses are and how to use them responsibly. And then at that point, you know, it's the same thing we see in scripture, right? Good creation and then a fall. Well, cannabis, good creation, but then there's a fall, but it can also be misused. And that's what I'm concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll talk about a little bit about the risks of marijuana in a little bit, but this point of, just marijuana Well, one of the things that you say in the book is that what would be, even if we legalize things, right, and we say, okay, what age is good for somebody to start, you know, exploring marijuana? And you even say something like, if the brain's still developing and you take it and you're younger than 25 years old, your IQ will be reduced and it's more prone maybe to mental illness and violent behavior, or it affects your personal ambition. So what are some of the risks that we are unaware of when it comes to marijuana, when it comes to this good plant that could have, you know, bad outcomes?
Yeah, no, and I think that's really important if we're going to make wise decisions about its use. It just makes sense that we would know what the benefits are and then what are the risks. And you mentioned a few there. THC, which is the psychoactive component of marijuana. It's one of the psychoactive components of it, but that's the one that people are most interested in, because that's the one that produces the high, that sensation of euphoria and peace that the people are after when they're looking to get high. THC interferes with brain development. And so if you're underage, while your brain is still developing, I would say it would be a very, very bad idea to begin experimenting, and certainly to become a regular user of marijuana. THC demonstrably, I mean, this is not up for debate, right? It's like, you know, 9 out of 10 dentists surveyed. No, this is like 10 out of 10 doctors. THC interferes with brain development. Now, that doesn't mean that if you like pass by someone who's smoking a joint that you're going to get stupid all of a sudden. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that if you experiment with it, but if you are a regular user, then it will interfere with brain development. Now, this is concerning because for men and women, our brains develop at different rates. The female brain generally is fully developed at an earlier age than the male brain is. And of course, you know, women knew that already, right? but for females, brain development is complete usually around age 21 or 22, somewhere in there. For men, it's 25 to 27. And so becoming a regular user before the age of 25 to 27 can have lasting outcomes. See, this is the problem, is that if that interference with brain development, you don't get it back. You know, you don't get it back. Your brain is basically stunted for life at this point. It's not like you quit smoking and then your brain, you know, catches up or something. That's just not how it works. Now, scientists haven't found that once your brain's fully developed, you know, you can get, you know, wasted all you want, I suppose. And it's the THC is not going to destroy your brain. You might not be at your mental best while high, but you know, you will sober up and not be stupid. You mentioned the IQ. One study that I saw showed as much as an 8-point drop in IQ, and that's a lot, because normal range is between 80 and 120. So 8 points is significant. Now you're not going to hear that because the marijuana lobby is powerful, and popular culture for whatever reason just loves marijuana right now, and so I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. One big part of the misinformation is this statement that marijuana is not addictive. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just patently false. It is addictive. Now, it's not as addictive as a lot of other things like nicotine or even alcohol, and certainly the harder psychoactive drugs. It's certainly not as addictive as opioids, but not as addictive doesn't mean not addictive. It is addictive. And adult regular users about 1 in 10 adult regular users will develop a clinical addiction to marijuana. A regular user would be someone who uses 3 to 4 times a week. If you're a teenage regular user, probably associated with this brain development, it's about 16 to 17% of teenage regular users will develop a clinical addiction, where your brain is shaped, your behavior is is such that you will risk harm to yourself and others in order to meet this need. And that's just not a good place to be. And of course, the Bible has a lot to say about addiction. And then one other one that you mentioned too, the links between marijuana use and psychosis and mental illness, the evidence for that is just growing and growing and growing, especially if you have a genetic predisposition toward mental illness. You should stay away from cannabis. It's just not good. It will hasten the onset of mental illness to you if you have that genetic predisposition. And again, mental health experts know this. They know this. It's just hard to get the word out.
Mm-hmm. It's so hard to get the word out. And I think it's part of this, what you're saying is the lobbyist. And right now there's a big push. And like you're saying, the culture is loving marijuana, that it's being legalized. But to me, it's surprising that it is legalized for recreational use and still appears on the federal system as a Schedule I drug. I mean, that to me, I don't understand how is that happening, right? Like, how can you have something that's called a drug, but you can at the same time legalize it for recreational use? And in your book, you say something that I think it's kind of interesting, that you showed up at this store and you ask, hey, is there any other purpose to buying marijuana other than getting high or something like that? And and they look at you like, no, like, are you stupid? I mean, that's kind of like the point of recreational marijuana. But as we go into this topic of, you know, legalized, not legalized, and recreational marijuana, I mean, if there's no other thing than that for recreational marijuana other than getting high, but then you have all this people saying, hey, but there are good purposes for it, right? And there's medical marijuana. Can you give us a little bit of light on the difference between one and the other?
So just to go back to that story, I walked into one of the just many cannabis dispensaries here in Portland, Oregon, where I live, and there's probably like a dozen within like 10 blocks, it feels like. That's not that big an exaggeration. And just in doing some research, I went in. The people were very kind, generous, and explained a lot of just, you know, how everything works. That they were really happy to help. And I asked them, this is going to sound like a dumb question, but is there any reason to smoke pot recreationally other than to get high? And she just laughed at me like, no, what a stupid question. Which brings us to the next part of what you had said there, that the people do smoke it for other reasons, maybe to curb anxiety, to self-medicate for whatever purpose. Maybe it's their ADHD or whatever. Well, at that point, we're getting into more medical uses. And so we're talking about medical marijuana. Now, is there a difference between recreational marijuana and medical marijuana? No, it's the exact same plant, right? You'll go to a cannabis dispensary and there'll be five people in line. Four of them will be there to buy it recreationally. One will have a medical marijuana card. The clerks at this point in states where it's legalized, they don't care whether you have a medical card or not. It's not like, oh, you have a medical card, I'm going to go to the special section of the dispensary where we have this the medical marijuana. It's all the same substance. It's all the same substance. The difference is why you are using it. So the differences are more subjective than they are objective. There's a lot of information out there and with regard to medical marijuana. A lot of it is not very helpful at all, because you would think that medical marijuana will cure you of everything. As my son, who's just about done with med school, has said, if something is a cure-all, it probably cures nothing. Now that's not the case here with the cannabis plant. That there are some medically demonstrated benefits of the various components, but there is a lot of misinformation out there about it.
Wow, and so let's move a little bit into the topic of, how does this relate to the Christian, right? I mean, we have culture, it's accepting it. Like you said, it's coming probably in no time. It's going to be in all 50 states and all around the world, right? Everybody's going to be smoking pot because it's like the new cigarette, right? Who cares about nicotine anymore when you have cannabis?
Yeah. But yeah, unless you're addicted to nicotine, then I guess you'll be caring about nicotine at that point. Yeah.
That's true. But what is the Christian response? You shed a lot of light on your book, and I mean, like I said, again, it's a small book, but it's full of scriptural content too, that speaks into should a Christian ever you talk about intoxication and how that relates to marijuana. So can you give us a little bit of light on how does the Christian relate to, or how does the what does the Bible say about how a Christian should respond?
I'd be happy to. So just first off, my conviction is that the Bible is sufficient. That is, we have all the divine words that we need to live faithfully before God. Doesn't mean we have all the divine words we might want, but we have all the divine words that we need to live faithfully. So what that means is that God has given us all the divine words that we need in order to think rightly about marijuana. Part of thinking rightly about marijuana would be that core conviction that the cannabis plant is created by a good and generous God. It wasn't created by Satan, even though, what is it called? Like devil's lettuce is another slang name for marijuana. The devil doesn't create things. He just perverts and distorts good things. Just like with alcohol, which is a good and generous gift of God, it can be misused. And the Bible has a lot to say about intoxication. Now alcohol and marijuana are different. The marijuana high is different than being drunk. But helpfully for us, the Bible describes why drunkenness is forbidden by God. If you look at all the prohibitions on drunkenness, I categorize them in three ways. The three of the reasons is it diminishes cognitive ability, it diminishes physical capacities, and it diminishes moral judgment. And for that reason, God says, do not get drunk. Well, the marijuana high demonstrably does all three of those things. It diminishes mental capacity, it diminishes moral judgment, and it diminishes physical capacity as well. And so for that reason, I think we can apply the prohibition on drunkenness to whether or not it's okay to get high. And I think I would say no, that the Bible does forbid that. Then that raises the question, okay, so alcohol can be used in moderation. Can marijuana be used in moderation? And even though I'm skeptical, I don't want to make a prohibition that the Bible doesn't make. I'm comfortable saying it would be a sin to get wasted. It would be a sin to get high. I'm not as comfortable saying so don't use marijuana in moderation. There's a lot of people who tell me, hey, I self-medicate with this, or I use just a little bit. Well, at that point, then we need to start thinking about other questions about discipleship. Because we have a lot that we battle as Christians. We battle the world, we battle the flesh, we battle the devil, and that's enough for me. I don't need to add to the trauma. I don't need to add to the enemies. I don't need to be doing things that diminish my capacity to battle these things, to grow in sanctification. And so I offer a series of wisdom questions, that can be applied, I think, to anything, to any gray area. But there are questions like, will marijuana use enable or impede my ability to take every thought captive in obedience to Christ? Will this enhance or will it diminish my worship? Will this enhance or will it diminish my discipleship? Can I practice this? Can I smoke pot to the glory of God or with gratefulness to God? I think these are the kinds of questions that Christians need to be asking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are so good. You said in the book, the Christian life is to be lived intentionally with no divided loyalties and no double-mindedness. It takes the totality of who we are, body, mind, and heart, to follow Jesus in a way that honors him. And I mean, as you were talking about, you know, can we use it in moderation? Real quick, would you explain a little bit of the, I know you said it's almost like a balance of THC and CBD. Mm. Is okay. CBD okay to consume? Does it offer any benefits to people than THC without the THC component?
Yeah, good. So I think that's important because there are a lot of people who, some doctors are recommending, certainly a lot of family, friends, popular culture is recommending medical marijuana. As I said, highly complex plant with many components. Two of the components that we see the most, THC is the intoxicating one, and then CBD. Now, technically, they're both psychoactive, but technically, caffeine is psychoactive. We normally don't say that CBD is psychoactive because it's not intoxicating. So you can use CBD and you're not going to get high. It will not intoxicate you. So all those prohibitions or the reasons for the prohibition against drunkenness. Is CBD going to diminish my physical abilities? Is CBD going to diminish my moral judgment? Is CBD going to diminish my mental abilities? And I think the answer there is no. And so the main qualms I have against THC, they don't apply to CBD. And so I know a lot of people who use CBD for like arthritis or, you know, other kinds of joint pain. Some it like takes, it reduces anxiety a little bit, I suppose. I mean, Now, CBD is purported to benefit all sorts of things. It's like I said, I've seen things where people say CBD cures cancer, it cures Parkinson's, it cures glaucoma, it cures IBS, it cures Crohn's disease. And of course, none of that has been proven at all. But CBD does have some certain clinical medical benefits for reduction of seizures. There's a very helpful drug that has been used to stop a very severe form of childhood epilepsy that comes from CBD. And so, hey, praise God for that. I'm grateful for that. THC, the psychoactive, the more psychoactive component of the cannabis plant, has been shown to diminish nausea, to reduce nausea, to increase appetite. And so some people use THC drugs to fight the side effects of chemotherapy. And I would say praise God for that, because most of the drugs that fight the side effects of chemotherapy, like nausea and lack of appetite, are going to be very, very, very psychoactive anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a chapter, I think, where you talk about suffering, and you actually use your wife's story a little bit in that. And I mean, this, when you go to that part, it's so interesting that you compare this time when Jesus is on the cross.
Oh yeah,
and he suffered like a primitive narcotic. Can you tell us? I mean, this opportunity for Jesus to maybe take a narcotic and he rejects it, like.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to me now that when Jesus is on the cross, there's these ladies who offer to him this this wine that's mixed with myrrh, which appears to have been, I think this is the common scholarship now, appears to have been a kind of narcotic that would take the edge off the suffering. It was a mercy ministry of this of this group of ladies, apparently, and yet they offer it to Jesus and he refuses it. Now, I'm not saying that we should refuse all mind altering drugs to eliminate suffering. I mean, heavens, if I were going in for surgery and I'm given the option of anesthesia or none, of course, I won't even be given that option. I have no moral issue with taking narcotics for medical purposes. But what I do want to do is I want to encourage Christians to take them responsibly. And then just as a data point, isn't it interesting that when Jesus goes to the cross, he refuses even this very primitive kind of narcotic? Now I'm not saying that means that no one should ever take one. What I'm saying is, isn't it interesting that he did? It has to be a data point for us to consider. Now, and I don't know why. Maybe he wanted to be totally clear-minded as he suffered and died for the sins of the world. Maybe that's why. Mm-hmm. But certainly Christians should at least be interested in that fact. That Jesus did refuse that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I had an experience too when my oldest one was maybe like in first or second grade in elementary school. He was on the monkey bars and he missed one. He fell and he broke his wrist, right? So we took him to the hospital, and then there was the doctor said, okay, there's two ways we can do this. One is we snap the wrist back into place with no narcotics, nothing. We'll just do it. It's going to be painful. You're going to cry just seeing your son go through this, right? Or we can give him this drug and he won't even feel a thing, and then we'll pop it in place and then he'll wake up later. But you got to sign this waiver because, sometimes it can go, it can go awry, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're filling this up. And as I see my boy there, like experiencing, I don't know, it was like he was in limbo, the eyes open, but he couldn't. Yeah. I mean, that in itself was almost as painful as seeing him go through the pain. You know, it was like, wow, is he going to wake up? I was getting a little anxious. Yeah. The nurse kept checking on him again and again. I'm like, hey, can we make this faster? Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of anxiety for a dad, you know, to go through that. But this experience with Jesus, it's almost like, I mean, like you're saying, right? It's just something to consider, the data. And maybe he wanted to experience the fullness of the suffering and the pain, right? Like, this is what it feels. I don't know, but what an interesting perspective. What an interesting point of view. So when we talk about the psychotic effect of marijuana and for Christians, sometimes like utilizing this connection of, hey, this is going to help me commune with God because I'm going to be my best self or my higher self. And you were saying something in the book that has to do more with Eastern maybe meditation or practices than even with Christianity. Can you tell us a little bit of light? Because I think a lot of Christians are kind of confused with, no, this helps me connect to the universe or the God or the whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, and so a lot of questions surround the use of psychoactive drugs for spirituality. There are a lot of proponents for that. There are even some Christian proponents for that. My question for them is, how do you justify from the scriptures the use of a psychoactive drug that diminishes mental abilities, diminishes moral judgment in order to commune with the God of the universe? And so I just make the statement that this has more in common with maybe the 1960s hippie culture, or maybe even some form of mysticism where you're trying to achieve some sort of higher plane. The scriptures don't have a category for anything like that. There's one verse that says that wine gladdens the heart, okay? But I think it's a big jump to say, okay, so here's my verse on wine gladdens the heart. Therefore, I'm going to use a psychoactive drug in order to have a better quiet time. These scriptures, on the other hand, do say that we are to think intentionally, take every thought captive in obedience to Christ. Meditation is prescribed. It's for the Christian, but biblical meditation is different than some forms of Eastern meditation, where you know you're supposed to empty your mind and I don't know, think about the sound of one hand clapping or whatever, right? That's not biblical meditation. The Hebrew word for meditation is haga, and it means literally to mutter over, to kind of almost if you're reading something really complicated and you're having a hard time understanding it, so you read it out loud to yourself. That's more what biblical meditation is. Far from emptying your mind with or without drugs, you are to fill your mind with the word of God and rehearse it. And a really good illustration I heard from a former teacher was that biblical meditation is like sucking on a lemon drop, where you just work it around in your mouth as hard as you can because you want to get every single thing you can out of it. That's more what biblical meditation is. This idea that in order to commune with God, we need some sort of psychoactive drug to lead interference for us or to release us. Well, there's a term for that. It's called an entheogen, but they just are not in the Bible. You don't find that anywhere. And so I'm deeply concerned about those who feel like they have to take a psychoactive drug in order to be right with God. Now, I've seen testimonies of people who are in pain and suffering, and then they start smoking pot and it helps their relationship with God. But I would be really skeptical that it's the psychoactive component that has helped their relationship with God. Now, it could be that the THC takes the edge off their pain and that allows them to think better for a little while. I would understand how that could be the case, but taking some sort of psychoactive drug in order to commune with God is just not a biblical concept at all.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing some light on this. And you know, I personally have experience. You know, everybody has somebody that has smoked pot or has been into meditations or whatever, right? The world is so mixed in. But I think this is so helpful because, one of my friends was even asking me, hey, what's the difference between, like Christian meditation and just meditating on the universe? But I think mm-hmm. you said it in a really powerful way that we're not really supposed to empty our minds, mm-hmm. but really take in the word and let it deal with us, right? And I think this has a lot to do with some of my favorite authors too. Eugene Peterson, he talks about, he's got a book called Eat the Word.
Yes.
Or Eat
that's
This
Book.
Yeah, Eat This Book. And that's what it reminded me of. Oh, that is more like a Christian meditation, right? Mm-hmm. Let it purify you and change your heart. That's so good. Todd, in the future, like let's say 20 years, 10 years from now, as more states start legalizing this, what do you think is going to happen? And how can we help people? How can we help them right now? But if we get to that point where, hey, now it's all legal, now everybody's smoking pot, what to do then? What would be something helpful?
So I think a few things are going to happen. So let's talk about the positives first. I think that as time goes by, we're going to discover more and more medical benefits to the different components of the cannabis plant. I suspect that's going to be the case. And drugs will be developed from them. And I think we can be grateful for such things. I also think that pot, marijuana, cannabis is going to be legalized in more and more states. I suspect eventually it will be taken off of the list of Schedule I drugs. So it will be legalized at a federal level. And eventually recreational marijuana will be legal in all 50 states. I suspect that's coming. What's going to happen then? Well, the same thing that happens in every state where it's legal, use is going to go up and underage use is going to go up. One of the justifications for legalizing it was if we legalize it, we can control it and we can keep it out of the hands of underage people, of minors. Well, that has just not happened. Everywhere that marijuana is legal, recreational marijuana is available, the use by minors increases. And so I think that is going to happen. And that's going to affect the church. Pastors say, hey, we'd like to have you come and talk on some contemporary issue. You know, we'd like you to talk on this or that, unless you have a better idea. And I'll say, hey, I'd be happy to come and talk about marijuana. And some pastors have said, oh, I just don't think that's an issue here.
Wow.
I think you have your head in the sand, because it absolutely is an issue, either recreational or medical. It would be good to get some biblical wisdom on this. And so I know it sounds like I'm plugging my book, but this is why I wrote it. I want to get good information into the hands of pastors and parents and Christians so they can make wise decisions about marijuana use, because it's, I don't think states are going to become more restrictive on it. I don't think we're going back to the days where it was illegal at both the federal and state level. And if that's the case, then we better start educating ourselves. We better get our biblical ducks in a row so that we can give good, godly counsel on it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's so good. So Todd, where can people find you? Where can they find your work? Is this one, do you have any more books, or is this your first book? Just interested
to
know.
No, it's actually my third.
Nice.
My second book is the one I'm most proud of, though. So I'll give it a plug. It's called Superheroes Can't Save You: Epic Examples of Historic Heresies. It's really a book about Jesus Christ, where I use superheroes as a foil to speak about add ideas about the person of Christ. So it's really a Christology. I wrote it to get good Christology into the hands of people who wouldn't ordinarily pick up a book on Jesus Christ. And then I have a book called God of Many Understandings, A Christian Theology of Religions, where I just look at issues related to the exclusivity of Christ, inclusivism, pluralism, universalism, that sort of thing. That one's a little more academic. I teach at Western Seminary. I have a podcast called Food Trucks in Babylon, which I think is pretty good. And so you can listen to me and a colleague of mine, Ryan Lister, there. So.
Love it. Yeah. Thank you for letting me know about that podcast. I'll check it out. And, you know, I have ChristianPodcast.com, so I'll put it up there too. I'll plug it in.
Thank you.
Todd, this has been so helpful. Just lastly, did you say your website, or where can people go?
I don't have a personal website, but I'm all of my writing and videos are all over the web if you just Google me. But westernseminary.edu is where is our school's website. My email address is tmiles@westernseminary.edu. Totally happy to interact with people over this issue.
Awesome.
Sure, or any other.
Yeah. Well, Todd, this has been so helpful. Thank you so much for writing this book. Guys, go check it out. Cannabis and the Christian, What the Bible Says About Marijuana, with Todd Miles. And we just had Todd right here. It's a great book. It has a bunch of insight. It talks about the Bible. It says what it says, what it doesn't say, the risks of marijuana, the difference between CBD, THC, like all these different components of what marijuana is and how we should have a Christian response. Todd, thank you so much for being on the show this morning. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks so much. It was really fun.